The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm holding The Ark of a Covenant, a new book by Walter Russell Mead. And if you've listened to the show for the 23 years, you've heard Walter Russell Mead on the program a little bit over the years when he's written a book. He is not a partisan. He is the global affairs columnist at The Wall Street Journal. He holds many different chairs in many different positions, and he's been essaying on American national security and foreign policy forever. But this book is different. Good morning, Walter. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to see you.
Well, it's good to have you up this early in Washington in your book-bound library. Did you set that up in the era of Skype, or did that exist beforehand?
The library's been here, but I decided with Skype and Zoom I needed some kind of a backdrop, and this seems to work.
Well, congratulations on The Ark of a Covenant. You followed my Twitter feed yesterday as I was reading and prepping for the interview. I am astonished by your assessment of the Trump phenomenon. I know the book is about America, Israel, and the fate of the Jewish people. I'm going to have you give a summary, then I'm going to go to this. I just told Jake Sherman he had to order the book to read this because it's maybe the best assessment of Trumpism I have read. Have you heard that from anyone else?
No, I haven't. But it's great to, you know, it's a long book. I'm not sure how many people have gotten to the end yet, you. But I do think that's one of the things I really wanted to get at in the book. Yeah.
I'm going to talk about definition, Sunbelt Republican, Jacksonian Americans, the Lodge consensus, in order to empower the audience to follow along with us. But first, would you give them a summary of the Ark of a Covenant, what you're attempting to do? Because you were really upfront at the beginning of the book. This is hard. This is not something that people normally do out loud. Talk about how hard a book is.
Exactly. Foreign policy is complicated. American foreign policy is probably the most complicated foreign policy in the world. And when people try to understand it, they often reach for these very kind of simplistic ideas. One of them that you'll hear is America supports Israel because the Jews are so powerful in the United States. And so what I tried to do was look behind that idea and understand, okay, wait a minute, you know, you actually look at the history, and very often it's been American Christians rather than American Jews, and by the way, not just evangelical Christians who've been more enthusiastic about this, but also to really understand the story, you have to get into the real history of the United States in a way that I think sometimes foreign policy scholars don't bother with.
They don't. And I think the idea of Israel as a driving force in American national security, the idea of Israel, not the actual politics on the ground, it did capture the American imagination beginning with Truman. And even before, as you point out, back, we've been fans of the Balfour Declaration forever. Why, Walter, why is the idea of a Jewish state so powerful in American politics?
I think a lot of it comes down to this deep immersion of American culture in biblical Christianity. And in this idea that American preachers from Puritan New England in the 17th century on have seen that they believe that the Bible predicts that in the final years of humanity's history is coming to its climax, the Jews will return to the Holy Land. And that kind of set up a religious expectation. But at the same time, the idea that the American ideals of freedom and democracy could redeem countries and civilizations and peoples that had fallen into decay animated the American sort of liberal and civic mind. So the idea was, you know, the Italian wars of unification, the Greek war of liberation, and a return of the Jews to the Holy Land could uplift these ancient peoples.
And it's worked. It's been powerfully presented over and over again that Americans, by a significant majority, embrace the state of Israel. They are not indifferent to the Palestinian problem, neither are you, but they embrace the idea of a homeland for the Jewish people, and they have for 75 years.
That's right. Well, you know, Americans were actually pro-Israel before there was an organized Jewish Zionist movement. Before Herzl, the father of Zionism, wrote his pamphlet, John D. Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan were petitioning the president of the United States to use his influence to establish a Jewish homeland in Palestine.
So that entire story is told in this book, and my listeners get a weekly dose of Michael Oren. So they've read and listened to people who are familiar with Zionism and American politics for a long time. What they don't get from Michael, and what I didn't get until I read this, is an analysis of Trumpism. Now, Walter, let's lay down, you are not a partisan. I have no idea how you vote, and I've known of you and been around you for, I have like zero idea of your political views. Is that intentional?
Well, it may just reflect to you that my political views are hard to characterize. I will say I do think that it's out of the center right and out of these complex of American values that I think the future can most easily and most beneficially come. But I would say at this moment, I look at both parties and I see chaos and disorder.
Well, there is. And I want to go right to the Republican side of that, because I'm living that story. And I've been living that story since the debate stages of 2015 and getting slapped. I got my Trump tattoos, which prove that, you know, Donald has been around, slapped me around. I don't care. He's on last week. So we get along fine. But I also am mystified by what happens still, because it's moving so fast. So no one, we got lots of day by day accounts of what Trump did here and what Trump did there. I know that story, but the fundamental tectonic plates of American politics are moving in a way that you grab hold of and try and explain. And those three terms need definition, as you gave them: the Lodge consensus, Jacksonian Americans, and Sunbelt Republicanism. Because they all, let's start with the Lodge consensus. What is that, Walter Russell Mead?
That was the set of ideas after World War I that Americans kind of adopted to try to deal with this new world. It was a more dangerous world than they expected. They somehow were more vulnerable to what was happening overseas than many had expected. But they wanted to promote democracy and human rights and so on abroad. But they really wanted to limit American engagement to economic engagement, maybe a little bit of political engagement, but no military engagement overseas. And in order to kind of square the circle of the gap between what they wanted, universal peace and democracy, and what they wanted to do, which was not very much, they really resorted to kind of an American form of magical thinking, of believing that the arc of history would make everything work. It's something that's, we're an optimistic people by nature. We do have this faith in a divine providence moving humanity forward. But the idea that arc of history is going to move to your convenience on your schedule, that was where the Lodge consensus, I think, went wrong.
You know, I remember when Francis Fukuyama's book came out, The End of History, I so wanted to believe it was true, Walter. I really wanted it to be true. And therefore, I fell into the idea, as did most of Americans' national security, foreign policy elite, that we'd won, right?
Exactly. History was over and we won. And now, once again, after 1990, we could have the perfect world and we didn't have to work very hard. No heavy lifting, right? We could lose weight and eat everything we wanted. That's what we believe.
The peace dividend. Remember the peace dividend? Gosh, what a stupid idea. Okay, page 568. The popular demand to be ruled by people who share one's values, mores, language, and culture has been the strongest political force around the world in the last 200 years. I would add also in the last 2 days in Italy, Walter Russell Mead, that desire drove the return of the center-right coalition to power in a decided way in Italy. I don't think it's the return of fascism. Poor political reporters who don't know much don't understand that page 568 of the Ark of a Covenant, in fact, explains what happened in Italy yesterday. Do you agree with that assessment?
I do agree with that, that you know, if you go back 200 years, most people were ruled by rulers who didn't speak their language necessarily, who they had absolutely no connection with. But on the other hand, the government couldn't do that much to them. The czar was all powerful, but his bureaucracy was weak. And if you live 500 miles away from Moscow, you know, the authority of government was limited. But modernization, development means that the state becomes more of a factor, more powerful, more of a factor in your life. And so you want to make sure that the people making those decisions are people who care about you, who you trust. And so that drives anti-colonialism, get the imperial rulers out. We'd rather be ruled badly by our own people than be ruled, quote, well by these very nice British civil servants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the populism that we see in the West today is simply is the chickens coming home to roost. That kind of demand to be ruled by people like us, like me, remains at the heart of politics.
Not like Walter Russell or me, not like Hugh Hewitt, but like you listeners.
I want to be ruled by me.
I don't either. I would be very bad at that. But I want to point out the last four elections that have had consequence in Europe, the Brexit vote, the red wall destruction by Boris Johnson, the Swedish vote and the Italian vote are all driven by this desire to get out of the European Union's super bureaucracy and govern your own life again. That's my simplistic assessment, but it's consistent with your explanation at the end of the Ark of a Covenant, Walter.
I think so. And I would also add that the Ukrainian desire not to be ruled from Moscow by Russians is the same kind of thing. This is all over the world.
So let me bring it back. That's the Lodge consensus. We govern ourselves according in America to do little, get a lot, sort of optimism. Magical thinking is Walter Russell Mead. What is a Jacksonian American? For the benefit of the Steelers fans, Walter, go slow here.
Well, Andrew Jackson was the first truly populist president of the United States. And he was in his time as polarizing a figure as Donald Trump. And he had, when I try to describe his approach to foreign policy, I take one example. It's the early 19th century. There are Indians, Native Americans, runaway slaves in Florida who were being armed, which was Spanish territory at the time, who were being armed by two British traders legally under Spanish law. And they are carrying out, military activities in what was then the United States, resisting General Andrew Jackson and his troops. Jackson sends American forces into Spanish Florida, crosses the international frontier, grabs these two guys, British traitors, brings them back into American territory, tries them before a military tribunal, and hangs them. And that helped make him so popular that his election as president was guaranteed. But this is a way of thinking about American foreign policy that is very widespread. I wrote about it in my book, Special Providence. And people like to think that, we Americans, we're humanitarian lawyers, or we're great commercial traders and we're builders of peace. But really, most of the time, Americans are not that interested in what goes on around the world. But if somebody attacks us or threatens us or the allies that we feel in honor bound to defend, you get this incredibly strong reaction, kind of like on Pearl Harbor.
Yamamoto, you've awakened the sleeping giant. And I think that when you write about Trump tapping into that, you have hit the mother lode. I'm going to come back with another segment of Walter Russell Mead. The Ark of a Covenant is his brand new book. And I do tell people, pages 355 to 380 are mandatory reading if you're going to write about politics. You might not agree with them, but if you don't at least read them, you're going to make a big mistake about Trump and his allies. We'll talk more about that when we come back for part two of my conversation with Walter Russell Mead, The Ark of the Covenant, The Ark of a Covenant, available in bookstores and at Amazon right now. Go and get it. I'll be right back with Walter Russell Mead.
Hey, everyone. This is Dwayne Patterson, producer of The Hugh Hewitt Show. I've known for a while now that there's been far too much of me here in the studio, and I finally needed to do something about my weight. My excuse was always that I couldn't follow a plan with the crazy schedule that I keep. I heard about PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition and how they customize their program for each client, and I decided to call. This was no problem for Rachel and the PhD team. They had me map out what my day looks like and created a plan to follow. And so far, I've lost 16 pounds already and I'm just 2 weeks in on the way to my goal of losing 45. Call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900 and make your appointment for your consultation. The plan is simple. It's based on science and nutrition. There's no pills or injections, and they even include 80% of your food if you want it. Call them right now at 864-644-1900 or find them online at myphdweightloss.com. And tell them you heard about it from Dwayne, the producer Hugh actually has on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt from Studio North. I'm talking with Walter Russell Mead about his brand new book, The Ark of a Covenant, The United States, Israel, and the Fate of the Jewish People. Walter, before I read the key couple of paragraphs, would you explain to people Sunbelt Republicanism? I am a Sunbelt Republican because I worked for Ronald Reagan for 7 years. I moved to California State for 30. So though I'm coming to you from Maine and I live inside the Beltway, I'm actually a Sunbelt Republican. And you named us and you spotted us. Tell us about us.
All right. Well, as you say, the Sunbelt Republicanism is, you could also call it Reagan Republicanism, but it was an odd thing by Republican historical standards. For one thing, it was really strong in the American South, which up until that time had been the most anti-Republican region, and especially in the white South. And it was kind of a mix of the very sunny optimism. I mean, at the time, it's hard to remember, but back when California was a red state in the Reagan years, California conservatives were some of the most cheerful and optimistic people anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
I think one of the hidden stories in American politics is the fall of red California and its transformation into a blue state, deep blue state, has left California conservatives, have made some of them among the most pessimistic and dark, with the greatest fears of the future, as they fear that what happened in California could spread.
So those Republicans have scattered. Now, I want to read to you that they are Sunbelt. They're optimistic. They believed in free markets. They believed in international trade. They believed in the use of American power, strong defense, all exactly. That good stuff. Walter lays it out. Now the key paragraph from page 268. For many years, liberal internationalists and neoconservatives failed to grasp the political force of new sentiment. The Brexit vote in UK and Trump's 2016 election demonstrated the power of the electoral force, but many still underestimate its potential impact on the United States and beyond. The new populism was not simply the product of economic dissatisfaction. It drew much of its power from the growing gulf between American corporate and political establishment that emerged in the post-Cold War era and large sections of the American public for whom the priorities and values of that multicultural, cosmopolitan, and post-Christian establishment were fundamentally alien. Donald Trump, in other words, Walter Russell Mead, rode to power on horses he did not breed or train, and that they're still out there riderless right now, and I don't know who's going to jump on them, but they're very fast.
That's right, and they're awakened now. You know, very often, people who aren't professionally concerned with politics, busy with their daily lives and so on, you know, politics goes on. They don't pay a lot of attention. But they do now. And Trump has energized a wave in American public sentiment. And they are, you know, I think they are now, some of them are disillusioned with Trump. Some of them are still loyal. But they are looking for a new leader, a new vehicle. I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
I think you're right. There was an aesthetic critique of Donald Trump, which obscured his fundamental political maneuvering. The aesthetic critique is he's too brash, he's too bold, he's too vulgar, he's too cruel. And a lot of people didn't like that. And it's not Sunbelt Republicanism for sure. It's Manhattan, Queens Republicanism. But the underlying forces that you talk about, they haven't gone anywhere, Walter. They're still there. And they may have been hidden or camouflaged by the Biden victory, which was an exhaustion victory, but they haven't gone away.
No, and you can see that in polls. Recent polls show that Trump would beat Biden in a rematch if it were held today. And somebody like Governor DeSantis, who is clearly appealing in many ways to the Trump legacy, is doing quite well. So the Republican Party is – you know, the people who sort of hope that we can get back to the pre-2016 Republican sort of Bush establishment party, I think are mistaking the nature of Republican politics and the Republican coalition.
Completely. And now I want to tell people why that shows up in a book titled The Ark of a Covenant, The United States, Israel, and the State of the Jewish People. Donald Trump understood, like no previous Republican, how much Israel mattered to Americans of every party. And he did what no one would do. He moved the embassy. He recognized the annexation of Syria. And he brought the Sunni Arabs to the table with Israel. And for that, a lot of people are still applauding, Walter. And you noted, it was unbelievably hard for him to push into the face of that.
Right. Well, let's take moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. A lot of folks may not know that from 1948 on, when Truman recognized Israel, we kept our embassy in Tel Aviv, which is a coastal city, is not Jerusalem. But from the first day of its existence, Israel has thought of Jerusalem as its capital. And most countries, you know, like us, are based in Tel Aviv. It's the only place in the world where a country is seen not to have the right to designate its own capital.
And when we come back, I'm going to talk to Walter during the break, and we'll put it in the podcast today. In the meantime, go and get the Ark of a Covenant, if only for those 27 pages to photograph them and send them to every political reporter and analyst you know. But if you want to understand American foreign policy, the place of Israel in it uniquely, go get the book. I'm going to talk for 5 minutes more with Walter after. That will be on the podcast today. I'll be back for hour three. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh. From number one New York Times bestselling author Vince Flynn comes Oath of Loyalty. Mitch Rapp confronts a very different kind of killer in the explosive new thriller in the bestselling Vince Flynn series, written by Kyle Mills. In the game of politics, some ties must be severed, but the Oath of Loyalty can never be broken. Oath of Loyalty by Vince Flynn, now available wherever books are sold. Go buy it today. I had a chance to interview the author, Kyle Mills, so go to my podcast to listen to that full interview. Oath of Loyalty by Vince Flynn. So I'm back with Walter Russell Mead and his brand new book, The Ark of a Covenant. Walter, we have 5 more minutes to tell people on the podcast, and I can play it tomorrow as well on the radio show. Why has Israel mattered so much in the political realignment in America in the last 10 years?
Donald Trump used Israel as a way of demonstrating to people that he would do what the establishment wouldn't do. He would keep his promises. He understood what was important to them. In some ways, he used Israel the way he used the Supreme Court nominations as a way to communicate with his base. So, you know, it begins, I mean, the U.S. has had in the law since the Clinton administration that we were going to move our embassy to Jerusalem. And every president running for office says, oh, I'm going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. All the experts tell all the presidents, don't do that. The Arab world will erupt. It'll be a disaster. It's the worst thing you could possibly do. So what they do is every 6 months they sign a waiver. Oops, not really time to enforce this law and move the embassy. But they continue to campaign on how wonderful it is and how much they plan to do it. So what Trump does is something revolutionary. He moves the embassy to Jerusalem. And, you know, again, every great diplomat, every experienced expert writes letters, makes statements. This is a disaster. This is the worst thing that could happen. Nothing happens. In fact, after the embassy is in Jerusalem, the Abraham Accords are the greatest advance in Arab-Israeli peacemaking really since Camp David or the Egyptian-Israeli agreements.
So, and Walter, what you just said is so important. Donald Trump wrote checks in the campaign that he cashed and they cleared. Everybody campaigned on doing what he did, and you just put your finger on it, on the Supreme Court and on Israel. He delivered to every portion of the Republican Party and to many of the independents his promises. However much China he shattered along the way and however chaotic it was, and you as a scholar stepped back and you found the signal among the noise. That was Trump's delivery mechanism.
That's right. And it was so important because it showed, first of all, the other politicians are insincere and I'm not. And also, don't believe the experts. They don't know what they're doing. Both of those are really important messages for a populist constituency.
So last question, Walter, and it's got nothing to do with the Ark of a Covenant, which is really about national security. Donald Trump did not deliver on one promise, a 350-ship Navy, 335, whatever it was. He didn't deliver. He didn't come close to delivering. Why did he get a pass on that? But not he got credit for everything else, but he just got a pass on the Navy.
Well, I think actually the failure to get the wall done was probably damaging too. But yes. Look, I think for a lot of his backers, the 350 ship Navy doesn't have the same immediate emotional appeal as an embassy in Jerusalem. It's a little abstract. Why 350? Why not 320? Why not 380? You know what I mean? It's kind of an inside baseball argument, and it's very, very easy for a populist movement. It tends to confine its deliverables to a few very visible ones. That one never quite caught on.
And the three named Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett did, and he delivered.
Exactly.
Even when experts said you can't nominate a Supreme Court justice with 2 weeks to go in the election, he did it. Now, he didn't win. Does that mean that he miscalculated, Walter?
I think COVID is probably what did him in. And people forget that his reaction to COVID, he pushed the vaccines, which many people would consider a success. But I think he was discombobulated about COVID, partly because you think about his businesses, they're basically hospitality businesses, right in the sector that is totally devastated. And I think some of his early interest in playing it down, when people like Tom Cotton and others were saying, no, this is a big deal. You know, it's a little bit like that sheriff in Long Island in Jaws who doesn't want the shark to destroy
Ebony Island.
The
yeah, don't. Hey, Walter, can I impose on you for 5 more minutes? I want to go back to the live show. And since you're up anyway, right? You scholars get the lounge around. You're like Churchill. You do your writing in the evening, don't you?
Today is my Wall Street Journal column day. Not much lounging going on here.
Well, give me 5 more minutes on the other side so I can ask you the key question about Donald Trump. The Ark of the Covenant is about Israel. He delivered on his Israel promises. But when we come back, I want to talk with Walter about a key component of Donald Trump, his feedback loop. And his feedback loop are the rallies. And I think Walter Russell Mead agrees with me. And we'll talk about that after the break. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. We have a brand new affiliate in Schenectady today, and I want to make sure that I say good morning to them. Amsterdam, Schenectady, New York. It is a terrific affiliate. Talk Radio 1490, 106.9 WCSS. Welcome aboard. 470 affiliates of the Hugh Hewitt Show. And I hope everybody listening goes out and gets this book, The Ark of a Covenant, by my guest, Walter Russell Mead, who, if you're watching on Salem News Channel, you'll see on the Skype feed. What people don't know, Walter, is I couldn't talk to my producer or my engineer during the break. They've been with me for 23 years. I don't think I've ever taken an author on Skype over an hour break. So this is a first ever deal. And the reason is you're on the nose about Trumpism. And I want to test my theory out. I think Donald Trump's policy was largely driven by his feedback loop of his rallies, that if something resonated with his rallies, like moving the embassy to Israel, Supreme Court justices, they got embedded in Trumpism. And if something didn't resonate, if it was flat, he rejected it. That's genuine populism. But it's also why he may have lost his way in COVID, because he didn't have any rallies. He lost his feedback loop. What do you think of my out there theory?
I totally agree. Totally agree. I think that, you know, you watch him in those rallies and, you know, if you were on the left, people would be thrilled and call it call and response leadership, where the leader is acting as kind of a voice of a community, a voice of a movement, and where the people by their responses can either get more of this or less of this. It's almost like there are mini referenda going on where he does these things. And I think, and without that, I completely agree with you. He didn't really, he missed developments in popular sentiment.
And he also had an electric fence approach to politics. Like, if you run into an electric fence, you don't do it twice. And so Judge Curiel, when I first, I said, I'm done with this guy. I'm finished with him in 2016 because he was attacking Judge Curiel. A lot of people were like me, and Trump stopped and let us come back. And then the Hollywood Access tape, he apologized. And so he would do things and he would learn, and it was intuitive. I don't know if he captures that in absentia, but the rallies are back. Now I want to broaden out the canvas. I mentioned last hour, Brexit, Boris, Sweden, Italy. They're all telegraphing the same thing, Walter Russell Mead. And I wonder if you think it's going to break out in Israel as well with the return of Bibi.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to try to predict an Israeli election, but the only thing you can predict is there are going to be more of them.
Yeah.
But Bibi is a leader very much like Trump in this way, that he's seen by a big chunk of Israel as their representative. And both Trump and Bibi can say, the establishment hates you, and that's why it hates me. You know, and that means that when Trump is criticized by experts, when Bibi is indicted by a court system that many Israelis see as kind of still under the rule of the old Israeli establishment, that to their core followers, this is just not an issue. In fact, the more your enemies attack you, the more I believe in you.
So let's go there in the American political drama, because I think you're absolutely right. And one of the tests for the refashioned Republican Party is, do the elites hate you? And by the elites, I mean the, what do you call them? The Davosee? I just call them the Manhattan Beltway media elite, the legacy media, the blue bubble media. They don't get it. And yesterday, Nancy May stunned somebody when she said, of course, I'll support Trump if he's the nominee, even though she's been critical of him, because the party is a party, Walter. And I don't think D.C. or Manhattan is ever going to understand Trump because they hate him so much. It gets in the way of their analysis, which I think your book might be useful in helping them see through.
Right. Well, it's him with his personality, but it's things like the white South. And, you know, I was born in South Carolina in 1952. I know a thing or two about the white South. And one thing is that compared to where people were in the 1950s and 60s, the white South is almost unrecognizably changed on race. It is, you know, far more accepting of black equality, on immigration, on issues like gay and lesbian rights. The white South is a very different place. But in the eyes of the establishment, it's seen as even more backward and, you know, and different than it was in the 50s. And the establishment is raising its minimum standards faster than Americans are willing or able to follow.
And they're changing the scorecard. It's sort of like the SATs aren't going to be applied anymore. You're not going to get into college because you have SAT scores. Okay, that's a blow to meritocracy.
Well, exactly. And it's all, you know, and then this idea of we're going to have, you know, any unrepresented group is going to get extra. But, you know, like, well, white evangelical Christians, you know, they're not, you know, you look at them, they're very underrepresented in the student body and in elite schools. But is anybody saying, oh, my gosh, we have to go out there to Texas high schools and recruit some young white evangelical Christians because they're underrepresented? No one is interested in this.
You know, if I go back to Tocqueville,
people
of Tocqueville's time just set out for the West with an ox, an axe, and a rifle and their family, and they made their way in America. And I think that's deeply in the American synthesis, which is opportunity and fairness. The Homestead Act is sort of beating in every Sunbelt Republican's heart. Is just open the way. Right now, there is an administrative state. It runs most of the country. There is a rebellion against schools. There's a rebellion in Europe. And Democrats have chosen to throw in with the bureaucrats, Walter Russell Mead. I don't think that was a wise political choice.
Look, Americans are not rule followers. The rule followers tended to stay in Europe. But if you look at the life of the average American today, you know, every interaction with your employer is governed by a zillion procedures. Even if you're sort of driving a UPS truck. You know, there's a rule book and you're constantly following it. Furthermore, between credit ratings and stuff, you used to be able to move a few towns away or certainly move a state away and be in a complete, you know, be able to start over. We're chaining ourselves down in all kinds of ways that we didn't used to. And there's a lot of resentment against that. And again, I think the establishment people in, you know, my friends in the Beltway don't really get that, in part because, you know, who gets into Ivy League schools? Who gets into our credentialing places? Rule followers.
Yeah.
You know, these days.
Student council presidents.
Yes, exactly. These days, to get into an Ivy League school, you have to have pleased every adult you interacted with from the time you were 14 on. You know, there's you have to be one of my students when I was teaching at Yale. One of my students once said to me, said, Professor, he says, you've got to understand, we are approval seeking missiles.
That's boy. And so it has been forever. Walter, let me conclude our conversation about the Ark of a Covenant with optimism, pessimism. I'm very optimistic about America because I think it's going to throw off the administrative state. Doug Ducey, Mr. Sunbelt Republicanism personified, the ice cream man who took over Arizona and turned it into a great place, just passed a law, signed a law that makes the funding for school students follow the kids. They can go wherever they want, religious or secular, any public school they want. They get a voucher. The money follows the student. It's revolutionary. I think school boards really screwed up the Democratic Party badly in the last 2 years, and that the blowback is going to be intense. And if the Republicans are smart, they will ride that horse. It's not, they didn't raise it up, they didn't train it, but they got to jump on it the way Trump did and run against entrenched elites. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I do. I would also say, you know what, if you homeschool your kids, maybe you should get the money that the government would otherwise use. I mean, you're saving the taxpayers money. Obviously, you can't do that without some kind of conditions and responsibilities. But you know what? I mean, again, our public school system grew up, you know, at a time when you had, you know, America was filling with immigrants who didn't speak the language, didn't understand the culture. And also farmers were being driven off the farm as the Industrial Revolution was changing things and were moving to the city. And they relied on the teachers, the professional, competent teachers, to tell their kids the rules and explain. And, you know, in those days, it was commonly said, you know, if you got whacked at, paddled at school by your teacher, you'd get paddled again at home for making the teacher do that.
Yeah. Not anymore. But that resurgence of essentialism, American essentialism, what it means to be an American, at the heart of the Ark of a Covenant, the United States, Israel, and the fate of the Jewish people. Walter Russell Mead, thank you for spending extra time with me. Congratulations on this magnificent book. Come back again soon. I'll see you inside the Beltway sooner rather than later. I'll be right back, America. Go get the Ark of a Covenant from Amazon.com or a bookstore near you. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.